Okay, everybody, good day. Welcome to the Wikibon Peer Insight Research Meeting, where practitioners discuss challenging problems in the data center. I'm your host and moderator, Dave Vellante. Today we're pleased to have Justin Bell, network engineer at Strand. Welcome, Justin. Please say hello to the Wikibon community.
Hi, everyone.
Headquartered in Madison, Wisconsin, Strand Associates is a multidiscipline engineering design firm with nearly 400 employees and 11 offices in the U.S. And we're going to talk today about how Justin and his team architected a remote office backup and recovery solution and some of the challenges and issues that they faced. So, Justin, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your role at Strand, please?
Sure. I'm a network engineer. We have a pretty small IT staff. There's five full-time IT staff in Madison, and then we have two full-time IT staff in different remote offices. So there's only seven of us total serving all 400 users. I'm in charge of the backup and recovery along with some other projects. Across all the offices, if you add them all up and you add up our active archives, we're running about 20 terabytes.
How did you handle backup remote offices before you started this project?
Prior to starting this project, we had basically a tape drive in every office, along with a set of tapes, a backup server running backup exec, and every night we would run a differential tape, and then on Fridays we would run a full backup tape. Now, because we only had two remote admins, that meant that six of the sites had an engineer or a secretary or someone like that running their backup tapes. They were responsible for swapping the tapes in and out of the autoloaders every week and then making sure the correct tape got out of the office.
So how'd that go? Engineers and secretaries must have been happy backing up, right?
Well, yeah, you know, you can imagine the thrill that they got out of swapping out tapes. And, you know, they would go on vacation or whatever and they'd miss tapes, or they would just forget or get busy and they would miss swapping out tapes. So if you take a successful week being that all of the correct tapes got swapped out and all the tape jobs ran across the offices, we only had a 40% success rate.
So 40% of the backups succeeded. And
yeah.
What was recovery like?
Recovery was pretty painful. You know, you had to, depending on what you needed to recover, you might have to call an offsite storage location for the tapes, which was different for every office, obviously, because they're spread out geographically. Or you had to try to talk that engineer into finding the correct tape that you needed, putting the tape in the tape drive, and then checking to see if it was right. If it was wrong, you had to call that engineer back up again, make sure they swapped it out. And then when you were done with the restore, if you found the stuff that you needed, you had to call the engineer to remind them to put the correct tape back in when they could have been working and billing out to a client.
Can you talk about how you architected a solution to this problem?
We decided we wanted to have off-site replication from each of the offices to come to Madison. And then at some point, it was going to be like a phase two of the project, to have all the Madison data go to another site kind of as a backup DR for Madison. We also decided, though, that because the offices were only connected with one or two T1s, that it wasn't going to be practical to just replicate the data to Madison. We needed to have a second copy of all the data available in each office in case something happened to the primary server and the primary storage in that site. We also decided that we needed something rather inexpensive because some of these offices only had 10 to 15 people in them. So, you know, going out and spending $100,000 on backup for 15 people didn't really make economical sense.
Can you talk about some of the business drivers?
We knew that it was a problem in IT. We were the ones having to deal with it and trying to find stuff to recover. And then hopefully that worked. Quite a few times it didn't work where we couldn't get back what, you know, someone had wanted. So in terms of metrics going to the CFO, we looked at the potential loss that we could face if a disaster happened. And we really used, you know, worst-case scenarios. So I went through our backup logs and all the logs that we kept of when backups failed and pulled out some instances where, you know, there were 3-4 days where there wasn't a good backup because there was a tape drive that was out or because the person was out of the office and hadn't swapped out any tapes and we didn't know. I added up that time for the RPO. Then we added up some of the worst-case scenarios for RTO, like having to rebuild the server and the operating system before you could even start to run the backup job. We added those together. We ran some numbers on how much money we would lose if an office and all their employees were standing still for that amount of time. And we used that as, look, this is the amount of money that you could lose having a one-day outage that wiped out the server. We also laid out to the CFO a clear differentiation between the current RPO, RTO, and the proposed. And I think that was really important because when we're writing out our memos to say why we need this, a lot of the acronyms and the numbers and stuff get lost. And so we needed to lay out really clearly what the difference was going to be and how it could help.
Were you able to take your RPO from days or weeks to hours or minutes?
Yeah, basically when we laid it out, the old system, best case scenario, the RPO was one day. Worst case scenario, the office goes out, it's 7 days. And that's if everything was correct. So we pointed out a case where it wasn't right, where we didn't have a full backup for a week. So we were looking at potential RPO of having like a week. So you got to go 2 weeks back for the Friday and then do differentials for a week. RTO, we were looking at least a day because you have to put all your service packs and all your stuff on your Windows server, install backup exec, which you probably don't have the install there if all your file shares are dead. So you got to figure out a way to get that. Hopefully you have a CD, but if your building burnt down or something like that, you wouldn't have that CD. Then setting up your tape drive. First, getting your hands on a tape drive. Hopefully you have one. Setting up your tape drive, getting your tapes in, hopefully they work, and restoring them, you are looking at least a day. And that is probably best case scenario. Now, if we have a local failure, our RPO is within a minute. Usually it's less than that. The solution that we have does write splitting, so the backup copy is always getting updated. RTO would just be, if it was just a local failure, like the server started on fire, would just be the amount of time that it takes for us to hook up a replacement server via iSCSI and use DFS to put the file share in where it needs to go. So you're talking about maybe a half an hour. Now, if it's a situation where the whole office burns down, our RPO is about a day because we replicate all the changes between the offices at night, so we don't use our primary lines during business hours. And our RTO is actually even less because we have a server ready to go here in Madison that can, all we got to do is mount up the copies that are here in Madison and throw them into DFS. It takes about 15 minutes.
Can you paint a picture for us in more detail as to what you actually architected and installed at each office and in Madison?
Sure. I'll start at the server level. So you've got the remote server, and it's got DAS, internal DAS storage that it serves out to the clients, the number of file shares on it. On that server, there's an agent called DiskSafe. Basically, it's a asynchronous write splitter that runs on there. You present it with some LUNs from an iSCSI device, which is the Falcon Store CDP product. And then it manages splitting off the writes from the primary that are coming into the primary, caching them a little bit in RAM, depending on the throughput, and then pushing them out to the LUNs that you present off the CDP device. From there, we take snapshots once an hour. We're able to keep those hourly snapshots back for 2 weeks. From there on, we keep daily snapshots for 3 months, weekly snapshots for a year, and monthly snapshots for a year and a half. That really helped us also prove to the CEO and the IT management that we're going to also be able to keep stuff historically long enough in each office that it'll actually be an improvement over what we had available for restores historically over tape, because tape we were only keeping a year back. Now, obviously, it's a lot more frequent, being that we could go hourlies for back for 2 weeks, but it's also that historical, once-a-month copy that we had actually goes back further than it did than when we had tape. From there, we replicate the data from the CDP device in the remote office up to Madison, where it lives. We keep that data historically back 30 days, just because we don't need that many copies of it. And then on every Friday, all the data from those replicas gets put onto tape and stored for a year, which was our normal tape schedule. We just kept it in place because it was easier to do that than to try to justify why we were changing it. We'll probably change that eventually, but we just haven't wanted to start that process yet.
And what's the disc at the local site?
The disc is another FalconStor CDP device. It's actually an NSS device. They're pretty much the same thing from as far as I can tell. And that's the target disc that the remotes replicate to.
So is that an iSCSI target?
Yep, it's iSCSI. And that's what makes it work so well with doing the backups. Basically, you hook up your backup server via iSCSI to the CDP device, and then you do mount volumes into just a empty folder on that server, and your backup exec doesn't, or whatever backup you're using, doesn't see it as anything other than a folder. So you don't have to do anything special on your backup software. You can have the simplest, easy to use backup software to just select that folder and tell it to back it up.
Can you talk a little bit about the decision to go with FalconStor, what else you might have looked at, and why you ultimately went the way you did?
You bet. We had looked at a ton of competitors. There were two biggest sticking points of requirements that we have that we felt were really important, and that is having two copies of the data in each office that were easily accessible and that you could recover quickly. That was the main one because we looked at it, and there were a lot of places, a lot of products that you could do at the time that could replicate the data back to Madison off the primary, but didn't really have a way to, or an easy way, integrated way, that was the same product where you could keep a second copy on completely different hardware in each of the remote offices. We felt that was really important because, and to be completely honest with you, if you try to push 500 gigabytes back to the office after it's recovered over a T1, you're going to be sitting there for a week and a half just waiting for your data to come back, And that just wasn't acceptable. So that was our first concern. Our second concern was the historical copies. We wanted to be able to have at least the same amount of coverage we did with tape as far as historical copies in that office. And so that means we had to keep copies back at least a year. And so that also took out some of the competition. We stayed away from VTLs because we felt that the big issue with those is that if you have a disaster and you have to rebuild your server, then you're still going to have to install some kind of backup software. And then you're going to have to run a restore of all that data, which is going to be a lot faster than tape, but it's still going to take a while before you can access your data. We wanted something where we could access the data right away when we had the disaster and didn't have to sit and wait for a restore to happen. That really shaved down a lot of the competition. We were left with the FalconStor device, a NetApp device, and RepliStor from EMC. We kind of cut out RepliStor because we didn't want the overhead of trying to take care of one more Windows server at each office. We also felt that they weren't as expandable, I guess, because we would have needed to, our existing backup servers in each office didn't have as much capacity as the primary. So we would have to buy all new servers just to handle the backup capacity. And that really wasn't something that we wanted to do either. So that really made the cost of a software-only solution like RepliStor rise up because we needed the hardware on the back end anyway. Another problem that we had with them is that their snapshots were based on VSS and essentially shadow copy. We had had problems with shadow copy on really large volumes that have a lot of activity, basically where it's a known issue that they'll corrupt the page pool and blue screen out your server. And the only way to get them back is then to delete your shadow copy store. That doesn't really work out real well for us if we want to keep those historical copies because there's no way to push them back over. There also was no bare metal recovery option with RepliStor, so we stayed away from there. NetApp we basically stayed away from because they couldn't provide the whole solution. They could provide devices in each office. That basically was an iSCSI SAN, the same way the FalconStor CDP devices were. They had a lot of the same technology on them as well, but they didn't have the equivalent to DiskSafe, where it manages the write splits between the primary storage and then going to the backup storage. We would have had to gone with a different vendor for that. and we really wanted to have one vendor be able to supply the whole thing so that when we had to call to support, there was one number, one company to be responsible for it. You didn't have to go back and forth pointing fingers or anything, because basically was the decision to go to Falcon Star at that point.
I got two questions here. How many boxes did you put in at each remote office? You put in a CDP.
That's it.
That's it.
Yep.
So
yep,
you got your
one.
You got your two copies of data by still having the internal server DAS and
exactly.
The CDP, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. And then that replicates to the central site and goes on to what?
It replicates to the central site and goes on to another CDP device. So there's a box that we added in Madison that it goes on to. And then that's where it goes into the backup server and goes on to tape as well.
Okay. So the four copies are the DAS, the local CDP in the remote office, the CDP/NSS in the central office, and that's copied to where for backup?
To tape once a week.
Okay. So that's
tape is our fourth copy. Yep.
And have you had to do any restores or major recoveries?
Yeah, actually, not too long after we implemented the solution, it was in the beginning of 2009, our Columbus, Indiana office had a mass power outage because there was a hurricane that came through off the East Coast, and its remnants were up there and causing some major flooding. They were out of power for 4 or 5 days. All we had to do, the system was so new that I was the only one who knew how to use it because I was the only one who had trained, and I hadn't gotten a chance to fully train everyone else. So my boss and I was out for the day. I was at home with my son who was pretty sick. So my boss ended up calling me and saying, hey, we've got this situation. And it took me about 5 minutes to tell him the steps to do to mount up a volume here in Madison and add it to the DFS share. It took him about 10 minutes to do it. He got it loaded up. He happened to be in early that morning, so he was in at 7 a.m., and by the time all the engineers came in at 8, no one could tell that there was a difference or that site was down, because we had an exact copy of all of their data from that night mounted up into the DFS, and the whole structure looked exactly the same. The only way that anyone could tell a difference is that for the user sitting in Madison accessing those files, it was a lot faster because they were local instead of over the WAN. We just kept that mounted up until they got their power back. That evening that they got their power back, we replicated the changes back from Madison to that office, set everything back to normal with the DFS, and everything was there. So no one even knew that there was an issue. So that was a real true testament to the DR capabilities. As far as just normal restores, it's somewhere around 800 to 900 restores a year off of this system. And that just wouldn't have been possible off of tape. We didn't offer that. We didn't, we didn't put that out there as a service when we had tape. We basically said it's for DR. If you have something that's going to take you more than a day or two to recover, we'll get it back for you. But that's it. Now if it's going to take you more than 10 minutes to recover, let us know and we'll get it back for you. It only takes about a minute to do. So
how many engineers you got?
We're just about a 400 user company. Or 400 employee company, and we're about 65 to 70% engineers.
All right, so if it's 800 to 900 restores a year, that's 4 mistakes a year per engineer. Did I get that right?
Pretty much, yep. There's a lot of engineers that we never hear from, and there's a lot of engineers that do a lot more mistakes than that. So.
Okay, and how long did it take to implement this solution?
When we were going through it initially, I don't know if they were underestimating us or just trying to sell us more stuff, but they wanted to sell us 2 days of professional services for installation per device. We basically said, no, we want you to show us how to do it. We'll get it set up. We'll use you to get it set up in Madison, and then we'll deploy it in the rest of the places. It ended up taking about a day and a half to get it set up in Madison and do the knowledge dump. After that, it took about half a day, 4 to 5 hours to get it set up in each office. You just need to basically know how to work iSCSI, and the interface that you do to set up the devices is very simple. And we have a CX300 here, and we've had some other storage devices in the past that we were used to, and this was much easier than dealing with any of those devices and trying to learn them in the first place.
Now, Falcon Store also offers journaling, mirroring, and snapshots. It sounds like you're just using the snapshot capability.
Yep, we use mirroring a little bit. I mean, mirroring's just for internal mirror, so that you have an internal backup copy. It's also really nice to defragment your volumes. It came with our license pack. We use it to defragment our stuff, basically our snapshots. So every so often when the snapshot store gets big enough, it'll add on another 5 gigs or whatever. But it does run a little bit faster from what Falcon Store has said if you defragment that. So the easiest way to do that is through mirrors. But yeah, typically we just use the snapshots. We don't use journaling just because it's not as important to us to do that.
Are you using Dedu?
Nope. When we purchased our equipment, we were on IP Store 5.1, and we're just now upgrading it to 6.0. But in 5.1, they didn't have dedupe that you could just add into the NSS/CDP solution. So we never bought the licenses. We decided after looking at the amount of storage that we're actually using that we didn't need it. If we were buying the solution now, we might have been talked into it. I could have seen that. But looking at the results of how our data is actually in there, and the amount of space that it takes up, we wouldn't have needed it.
The question:
what's your main backup software?
The only backup software that we run now is one copy of Backup Exec. We use the Falcon Store software to mount up volumes from all of the copies of data that we have, and it basically copies them off of there.
The replication, can you basically say without Riverbed, is essentially this wouldn't really work?
Actually, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. When we originally implemented the system, we had decided to use the Riverbed appliances, and that caused a lot of animosity for my network guy because we were worried that with the amount of data that we were going to end up pushing, it would clear out the cache, and it would effectively make it less effective by having a high turnover in the cache and not storing as much data that the users needed. After we implemented it, it was pretty obvious that because Falcon Store has this microscan option where it sends really small blocks anyway, now we bypass our Riverbed devices so that the cache doesn't turn over as much, and we basically exempt the traffic that goes in between our Falcon Store devices from the Riverbed. We push about 21 gigs total from our remote offices to Madison, and that's from the 7 offices that have the devices, and some of them have 2T1, some of them have 1T1. But basically that microscan shrinks it down enough that we haven't had to worry about it at all. We see the other thing that they have built into the Falcon Store devices is compression across the line. So you can compress the data that's going out even after the microscan. And when we do that, we still see that it's we're getting about a 50% compression ratio. So we're pushing 6 megabit over 2T1s if you don't count the compression. So no, we don't use the Riverbeds for that at all.
Wasn't there on the initial seeding of your remote device to the home, I mean, isn't that a big deal?
Yeah, that was a big deal. There's nothing you can, no other way you can say that besides it was a big deal. What we were able to do is schedule a throttle on that replication. Basically, it said at 6 a.m., throttle the data back so that it can only use about an eighth of the T1. So really not much data going back and forth at all, but it kept it alive to the point where, you know, we didn't have to start over. Then at 6 o'clock at night, we said open up the throttle, use the whole pair of T1s. There's actually a pair of T1s that go to Joliet. Go there, and then at 6 a.m., pull back again so that we didn't affect our users. And then over the weekends, of course, it ran the whole time. That is basically what got us through that throttling, that schedule throttle, basically is what made it so that we were able to do that initial sync.
Okay. Do you happen to know the devices? Is it using TCP, UDP, or something other? Is it easy to secure?
Yeah, you can use either TCP or UDP if you have any devices, which you wouldn't have now, but any devices that were before version 5, they all used UDP. Now they use TCP. You can do encryption between devices. We run our WAN. We don't need the encryption because we have MPLS. So we don't worry about the encryption in between the offices as much. If that was something that you were worried about, they do have encryption on there. I don't know. Since we don't run it, I don't know what kind of overhead it has on it. But
whoever asked that question, can I have your first name at least?
Michael.
Other questions?
Yeah, do you distinguish archive data from backup data? And if so, where do you keep your archive data?
We store our, I guess, archives to us is a little bit different than a lot of companies. We don't have archive system that goes and pulls out individual files that haven't been touched. We kind of developed our own system where it would pull out old projects that haven't been touched. So it's not an automated system, whereas you've got two different copies or like a primary volume and then a pointer to a backup. It's we actually move the files off into separate storage. That goes on our CX300 on some ATA drives, lower big ATA drives is where we have our archives. And yeah, we have different backup policies for those because going with the whole idea of having it be like a service, we asked, you know, on the archives, how often is it changing and how often do we really need backups? Our archives are read-only except when we're moving projects into it. That only happens once every 3 months. There's a possibility that someone might request us to move something into there. So we decided, you know, we really only need to back it up once a month, and it's not that big of a deal if we lose a month's worth of data because not very, very little should actually put into there. So we actually only put that out to tape. We don't put that on our CDP devices because we got in and decided it was too expensive to do that. Or we can just throw it off the tape. In the event of a disaster where it wipes out Madison, our archives are the very last thing that anyone's ever going to, you know, think about needing. We're going to want our accounting stuff back up. We're going to want our active projects back up, things like that. But the archives are going to be the last thing that we recover.
I wanted to ask you, Justin, what advice you would give to your peers before we close.
One of the things that we did was we tried to figure out how to leverage the backup in DR for additional business value. Basically, that was what came into opening it up to all of our users to just try to help them as much as possible. And that extra business value would really help justify the purchase beyond just being a backup. Because you're talking to your whoever's above you or the owner of your company or whatever. If you haven't had a big disaster before, like we haven't had a huge disaster ever, I'm going to knock on some wood right now. It's hard to say, well, if you had that disaster, this is what it would cost you. They'll come back with saying, we haven't had that disaster, so I don't know how much I want to spend on this. If you can say, well, if you have your disaster, it'll cost this much. But if you also spend this money right now, we can provide this and make the company better and provide an improvement to our users, aside from just a disaster happening. And so that improvement will happen all the time, and you're going to get that value right away. I think that helped out a lot. Another thing I would recommend is to plan out your capacity plus 50%. That's pretty much what our snapshots are for a year. It's about 50%. However, that's for file shares. If you have a database, like an SQL database or something like that, especially if you're running backups from SQL, you're going to have a lot more usage. There we're seeing about 120% snapshot versus the actual size of the LUN. You got to remember that if you're writing a file, and it, even if it's the same file you've already written, if you don't have dedup and you take a snapshot of that, it's one for one in your snapshot. Whether you copy a data or copy a file or you delete a big backup file and then you recreate that backup file, that's one to one on your snapshot. So beware for those things. And then the only other thing is, you know, everyone likes to say, and I've seen it happen on some local companies here, is that Murphy's Law will kill your DR solution. So try to make it as automated as possible. And that's really one of the things that we were going for, too. Take the human element out of it.
Excellent. Great advice. Thank you very much on behalf of the Wikibon community, Justin Bell of Strand Associates. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experiences with us today. So thanks very much.
Hey, thank you. I was happy to do it.
So as a reminder, over the next 24 hours or so, we'll have up on Wikibon 6 research notes pertaining to the call today with user actions. So look for those. Feel free to hit it, edit, and improve the pieces or put up your own piece or even write a wiki tip. So thanks for listening today, everybody, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.